I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia. Gunk, yes, G-U-N-K, is the title of a novel by British author Saba Sams. The cover design features a bright chartreuse background, with the title spelled out in fat pink letters, suggesting a lightness to the novel. But don't let the title or the cover design deceive you. Gunk tackles some serious themes: motherhood, non-traditional motherhood, defining motherhood at all. You see, Gunk opens with the scene in which Jules, our protagonist, is caring for a newborn baby, a baby we quickly learn is not her own child. From here, the novel moves back in time, and we learn about Jules' childhood, her relationship with her ex-husband, and we meet the new bartender at the club Jules manages, named, yep, Gunk. The club is named Gunk, not the bartender. I recently spoke with Saba Sams about the novel. Here's our conversation. So this novel, Gunk, it opens with the description of a scene with a newborn baby. What's happening here? Can you set up Gunk for us?
Yeah, so the first scene is my main character, Jules, and she is back home at her flat with a newborn baby who she is mothering, but she is not the mother. And you're really just thrown in there. It's purposefully mysterious. It was actually almost the last scene that I wrote of the book. I wasn't sure how I would shape Gunk until very, very close to the final draft. At which point I read Giovanni's Room, actually, by James Baldwin, which has a very similar structure. And I was really inspired by that kind of present tense, looking back and kind of retelling the past, the how did we get here kind of structure.
So I'm curious about the inspiration behind the book. Where did this story begin for you?
So if the last scene I wrote was the first scene I wrote was almost the last scene, which is the birth scene. I wrote it having given birth myself and having never really read a realistic birth scene or a birth scene that felt like representative of my experience. And I think I also just wanted to read it because of that. And then I wanted to write it because it felt like something I had to get down. So I wrote it from the perspective of the character giving birth. In Gunk, it's actually from the outsider perspective, which is Jules, who's not giving birth. But when I first wrote it, it was a first person perspective and it completely didn't work. I saw why I have read so few birth scenes that work or that feel believable, because it became like writing. It was like trying to write like an acid trip or something. It just stopped making any kind of narrative sense really fast. That was the moment when Jules came in, this other perspective. I realized I had to kind of reframe. And if I needed a witness, because I wanted to witness birth, that's why I wanted to write it. I also needed a witness in the book. You know, I needed someone to be there watching, narrating for me. And that's how it began. I just had these two women in a labor ward, and one was giving birth and one was watching. And I was just then kind of like presented with the question of how they got there. And that was the story of the book.
Yeah, I feel like we're talking about birth scenes and like this newborn scene at the beginning and this birth scene at the end. But those are such small parts of the book. The main thrust of the book is this backstory, this context that you are providing about these two women. Maybe we should introduce Jules and Nim to our listeners. Can you talk a little bit about these women?
Yeah, sure. So Jules is 40 and she is working in this kind of grotty student nightclub called Gunk, which belongs to her ex-husband, Leon. And she basically runs the place while he kind of goes around being useless and flirting with underage girls. And Nim is one of those girls. She's hired to work the bar at the very beginning of the book. She's got a shaved head. She's very mysterious and charming. She's not actually a student, but she's the age of the students. She's 19. And there's just like this immediate kind of electricity between them, this kind of like non-romantic, like, but really strong, charismatic connection. And that's the two of them.
I feel like I want to talk about relationships and maybe in particular mothering, because Jules feels called to be a mother, but the traditional route to motherhood was not or cannot happen for her. Nim accuses Jules of mothering Nim and even of mothering Leon. Can you talk a little bit about what's behind Jules's maternal feelings?
Yeah, sure. I think a big side of writing Gunk for me was expanding this word mother and kind of breaking down the barriers around how we define mother, which is why, you know, Jules can mother a baby that she didn't give birth to, why Jules can mother Leon, for example, who's not her child, why Nim, who's younger than Jules, can actually step in and mother Jules in lots of scenes. I think I was struck by this thing of like, mothers need mothering. You know, I'm a mother to young children, and I felt like I had a baby at 22, and then I was like no longer allowed to be mothered anymore, but I still was kind of a child. So I was trying to like traverse all of that and get all of that in. But I also think with Jules particularly, there's just this real socialization, isn't there, with growing up as a girl and then a woman, to care and care and care and constantly put other needs, the needs of other people, before yourself. And I think that her desire to be a mother and her continuous like overstretching herself to care for her ex-husband, who she like shouldn't really be caring for ever, but especially not now they're divorced, and then even his club and all the people who go there, it's just this real socialized pressure that I don't know if she manages to really escape from at all. But I wonder if there are many different types of mothering, and if you can fully label yourself as a mother but also allow yourself to be mothered at the same time. Maybe just that realization for her could be like an opening into a new kind of like life, or a new way to kind of relax into allowing yourself to be looked after too. That makes sense.
Yeah, I like this exploration of motherhood and what it means to be a mother and who is allowed to mother. But I also loved the way that you explored other relationships, you know, like Jules and Nims, their relationship. It's a friendship, and at times it's more, but at the same time it's not, which might, you know, might not make a ton of sense to our listeners. But I like that this novel encourages readers to think about non-traditional family roles. But even more than that, I loved your exploration of the need for definition, of being trapped by language.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, for sure. That leads on really nicely from what I was trying to say about just the word mother too. I think I was thinking, if I was thinking about like who can mother and what a mother is, I was thinking about all the kind of categories of relationships and love. And I think the thing about Jules and Nim's relationship is you can't categorize it. And I could feel myself when I was writing them trying to categorize it a lot. In my first draft, I felt, you know, I kept wanting to work towards some kind of definition. Like I wanted to kind of make them both parents of the same child, or I wanted to make them like lovers, or, you know, I was trying to like force them into a box. And none of the boxes were right or would have made sense or would have worked for their characters. And actually would have opened up a whole new can of worms, like with the age gap. And suddenly I was like trying to put my characters into scenes that really wouldn't have fitted them. And that was the ultimate realization for me of the book, was that I had been so hooked on trying to like open up the word mother, and I had forgotten to open up all these other like definitions and categories. I was still trying to like press my characters, I think, you know, in some kind of traditional like novelistic writing sense, I had been working towards like the marriage plot with them. And when I let go of that, and when I realized that what they had come to teach me was that like this undefinable, uncategorizable relationship was actually like much more generous and meaningful, that was when I kind of came around to like what I had been trying to do with this book all along.
So you mentioned one of your characters, Leon. He's quite the character. He owns the Gunk Club. He owns Gunk. Mm-hmm. He used to be married to Jules, who still runs the club. And in some ways, he hasn't grown up. But as Nim points out to Jules, Jules hasn't let him. His mother hasn't let him. How do you approach writing a character like Leon, someone who readers might cringe at times, and also as someone who had such an intimate relationship with our narrator?
Leon was interesting because he came to me like very kind of flat. I think I am always like digging to write characters who are complicated or, not necessarily straightforwardly good. And with Leon, he was just so immediately like the fool. And it was very fun to write him. He brought like a real energy to every scene. I could just throw him in and like chaos would ensue. And that was great for me to just like have a good time in my first draft. And then obviously that tires out. And I knew that I needed to do something with him that was like more meaningful and vulnerable. And I didn't really know why. And then I was thinking about how the thing is that the patriarchy isn't just bad for women, right? It's bad for men too. And so, like you say, Leon, maybe he hasn't been allowed to grow up, or maybe he has refused to grow up, and that refusal has been allowed by his mom and by his wife. And if women are socialized to care, maybe men are socialized to just like be cared for and be selfish. But Leon suffers with that. He really does. He, this like Peter Pan boy, ultimately like flails and can't really survive in adult life, and or his relationships crumble. And for me, he's kind of the most painful character, even though I really, really don't want to pity him because he's so bad. And that for me is a successful character, I think. For me, as someone who, like, I really don't want to love, but I have to.
My guest today is Saba Sams, author of the novel Gunk. So let's talk about the title. I keep saying the word gunk. Gunk is the name of the club where they all work. Gunk is the name of the title. I did see it used as a description late in the book, but I'm wondering, does it have another reference or meaning?
Gunk was translated into German, and the translators, there was a long conversation because the word gunk doesn't exist in German.
They have
And
a word for everything.
yeah, it's so interesting, right? It feels like such a specific word to me, and it has many meanings. And it came, I mean, I named the club Gunk initially, before I had named the book Gunk. It was just like felt like the right name for that kind of club. And I knew it was visceral and bodily, and I knew that's what I wanted my book to be. And then it kind of took on new meanings about kind of like the gunk of life and gunky relationships and that kind of, like all the undefinable, like these kind of sticky places in between the categories where my characters all seem to exist. And then the point that you said when it was used as a descriptor late in the book is I was like, I was with my friend in my garden, and I was talking about the book I was writing, and she was like, "Oh, like the gunk that a newborn baby comes out covered in." And I went back in and I like added it to the birth scene. She's referring to this stuff called vernix, the like white stuff that a newborn comes out with all over its body. And that was a cool full circle moment. That was really like, oh, that word is bigger than the word that I thought it was. And it's also, this is like the book that I have been like intending to write, suddenly kind of coming together. That was a really special moment. It was probably like my favorite part of the process, a process which was mostly just really hard.
Let's talk about Brighton as a setting because it felt more than a setting to me. Or was I imagining that? Was there some other sort of exploration of the city going on for you?
Yeah, true. It is more of a setting, I think. It's a character, really, isn't it? It's like Leon. It's kind of like, and like, I think it's the way that maybe most writers would write where they grew up, which is this like quite intense hatred or like, like irritation, but also like a real love. And I think I'm allowed to do that because I come from there. Like, if anyone talks about Brighton, like I talk about Brighton, who's not from Brighton, I'll take offense. But because I'm from Brighton, it's okay. But yeah, it's such a specific place. And I think because it's on the coast, seasons there feel very intense. And I think because it's like a very touristy place in the summer, So that brings like a whole new crowd, a whole, like the streets look different. There are so many more people. Like, and then in the winter, it can be really very bleak and grey and empty and cold with the like freezing sea wind. And having that, those seasonal markers felt really important for me, because I knew I was writing this novel whose structure was also a pregnancy. So I had this very specific length of time that I needed to mark out quite carefully. So I think that's what placed them in Brighton initially, was just that real, like, it felt like with the seasons and with the size of it, it's a small city, it felt like it would be helpful as a ground for the story. And then very quickly it grew and became a character. And it started to really impose itself on the book. And now I just can't believe that I could ever have considered writing anywhere else.
So Gunk was released in the UK in 2025, and now readers in the United States are finally reading it. How has, you know, the US publication compared to the UK's?
Well, this in the UK, I had a short story collection come out the year before, or no, not the year before, like 3 years before Gunk came out. So I felt like I was a little bit of a known writer. I had a small audience. So like there was some kind of expectation, which felt like pressure. And it also felt quite warm and exciting. Send Nudes, my short story collection, will be coming out next year. But we went with Gunk first, just because the book deal came later and it made more sense to bring the book that's coming out in the UK now out in the US. So yeah, it feels like a swapped experience of like, this is my kind of introduction to an audience. It's felt like amazing so far. The publishers, lovely. All the editors have been great. It's very online, you know, lots of emails, lots of Zooms, rather than the more in-person stuff that you get to do when you're in the country. But I mean, it's just like the idea that I have like crossed over is a real like stamp, you know. It makes me feel like things are going in the direction that I want them to, you know. And I think being a writer is basically just like a wall of self doubt all the time. So moments like this are so important to just like continue doing the work.
Well, you mentioned your short story collection, Send Nudes, which came out in 2022 in the UK. So I guess not necessarily differences in publication, but talk to me about, you know, writing a novel versus writing short fiction. How do those compare for you?
I wrote the short stories all on, or not all, but like the vast majority on courses. So I did a master's in creative writing and I did an undergrad in creative writing. And short stories, if you're studying fiction, are generally what are asked for, right? Because the teachers have time to read them. So short stories for me, they were such a place of experimentation. I was really just learning to write. And because I was a young woman, I was mostly writing about young women, and somehow they kind of formed themselves into a collection that made sense. And then it was a book, just like a string of very lucky circumstances that meant I then had a short story collection. And with Gunk, it was in the UK, I signed a 2-book deal, which is very common when you write short stories. So then I was like faced with this task of writing a novel, kind of under contract. And I didn't think that I would be able to do it. And I just approached it like I would approach a short story, which is I just like waited for the characters to walk into my mind. And then I sat down and started writing, and it was like absolute chaos. I got to about the length of a short story, and then I just kind of kept on going, and it became so messy. And that's why the first question I answered about James Baldwin and Giovanni's Room, like I really had to turn back to novels, and I had to just go and really look at short novels. I knew I wanted a short novel, and I had to really just like piece together how the shapes look, which is obviously what I had done when I was studying short stories. And because I was no longer in the environment of studying when I wrote the novel, it didn't occur to me to do it in the same way, but the exact same approach was necessary. But I now, I think once you've kind of broken the shell of a novel, I feel very attracted to writing another one now. There were moments of Gunk when I thought, okay, I'm just going to go back to short stories after this. I know how to do short stories now. And even though I don't think that one or the other form is easier, short stories can be done in a shorter time and then tinkered with. And that is easier. But yeah, now I'm thinking about my next book. I find myself more and more thinking about like the novel in me, because that something about a huge project just feels like really exciting. You can just squeeze so much in, you know?
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from Gunk?
I do. For me, it's a book about expansive thinking, particularly in terms of love and relationships. I think it's very easy to get caught up, particularly I think as a woman, but for all people, in romantic love as some kind of like redemption or stamp. And while Gunk is about motherhood, I think really for me that is a central message, is that romantic relationships are not your kind of be all and end all, and the pressure to be in one actually forces really unhealthy romantic relationships. And I really wanted to write about love in a way that didn't center the marriage plot, which I mentioned before. And I think we're moving away from mess. I think we're scared of mess in current, particularly like social mediaified society. And I would like a return to the gunk.
Well, the book is Gunk. Saba Sams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Gunk by Saba Sams was published by Knopf. In 2022, book critic Suzanne Perez reviewed a memoir by child actor Jeanette McCurdy titled, I'm Glad My Mom Died. Suzanne described McCurdy's voice as authentic and raw and said her story is worth sharing. Now, McCurdy has written a novel titled Half His Age, which Suzanne describes as a modern-day Lolita set in the classrooms and closets of an American high school.
I enjoyed Jeanette McCurdy's unflinching memoir, I'm Glad My Mom Died, as much as you can enjoy any book that recounts emotional and physical abuse. The former child actor, known for her role on Nickelodeon's iCarly, detailed her complicated relationship with her late mother with vivid writing and a directness that reminded me of modern classic memoirs like The Glass Castle and Educated. So I was intrigued to hear that McCurdy was coming out with a novel. And then I read the description. And then I saw the cover. And oh boy. Half His Age follows the sexual fantasies and realities of 17-year-old Waldo, a teenager who becomes infatuated with her teacher. Waldo lives in Anchorage, Alaska, with a single mother who chases man after man and makes lots of promises she doesn't keep. So right away, we get hints of McCurdy's memoir and wonder how much of this fiction might be based on reality. Waldo is snarky, vulgar, and sexually aggressive. She binges on junk food. She works at Victoria's Secret and blows her paychecks with online shopping sprees. She buys clothes, makeup, and skincare products in an attempt to make herself beautiful, or at least something she thinks others might want her to be. After a series of sexual encounters with boys her own age, which she recounts in graphic but emotionally distant detail, Waldo sets her sights on Mr. Corgi, her married, balding, middle-aged creative writing teacher. Can we pause just a second here to appreciate these characters' names? Waldo and Mr. Corgi. Those details tell you a lot about McCurdy's overall message here, with Waldo searching to find her true self among the crowd, and instead fixating on Corgi with the puppy dog eyes. Where the novel goes from here is predictable and hard to read, a modern-day Lolita set in the classrooms and closets of an American high school. But McCurdy gives us a wholly original character and a plot that twists and turns and keeps us guessing. Waldo is brash and self-deprecating, and while she behaves like an average 17-year-old, she is not a stereotypical victim. The author does not shy away from parental blame, as she makes clear that Waldo's dysfunctional family sets the stage for her reckless pursuit of affection and love. In fact, some of the novel's most troubling scenes don't involve the mismatched lovers, although those are plenty disturbing, but rather the exchanges between mother and daughter. Waldo is raised to believe that the secret to happiness is pretending, transforming herself into a woman that fulfills a man's fantasies without caring or even knowing who she really wants to be. Much like McCurdy's memoir, Half His Age is bold and brash and unapologetic. Its content will no doubt be offensive to some, but this tale of power, neglect, and misguided yearning offers plenty to discuss. For Marginalia, I'm Suzanne Perez.
Half His Age by Jeanette McCurdy was published by Ballantine Books. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Next week, we will revisit our conversation with Karen Russell in anticipation of the paperback release of her novel, The Antidote. Here's a little preview. This book is set in the fictional town of Uz, Nebraska. And the land of Uz is from the Book of Job, but we're in Kansas, so I hope you forgive this question. When I started reading this, I felt like The Antidote would be a retelling of L. Frank Baum's story, The Wizard of Oz. It's set in Uz, which is very similar to Oz, but, you know, other than the witch, the personification of a scarecrow, a town named Uz, gales, western skies, tornadoes, sepia-toned memories, and the mention of home, it felt highly original. Did you take any inspiration from The Wizard of Oz?
Man, I mean, I've seen that in so much copy now, Beth. And I'm like, yeah, oh, I guess that naming the town Uz, it's really, I mean, in the Wheel of Fortune of it all, right? It's very close to Oz. But I'm sure that book imprinted on me. I think you probably can't have like a scarecrow point of view character without courting that comparison. But I think the influence that I more consciously courted was the Book of Job, probably. You know, I think there is this farmer Harp who is like a reverse Job. I mean, he's a zero yield man. He's really, it would be funny if it wasn't also tragic, you know, eye level. I mean, he's been struggling. He's a bachelor, committed bachelor. He's sort of like given up hope of being a success at anything. And then on Black Sunday, all of his neighbors' crops are destroyed, but he is miraculously unharmed. And, you know, as he says, wow, this extreme fortune is extremely lonely. I mean, it's very discomforting to him and becomes quite painful. He can't figure out what to do with it or how to share it or why it's happening. It feels very much like a curse in a certain regard, or at least like the uncanniness of it, of being a success when so many others are failing, troubles him. I will just say, because this sounds like such a heavy book, I realize hearing myself talk about it, I think there's some humor, like, not as much from the scarecrow as I was expecting. Beth, the scarecrow is like a difficult choice as a point of view character, because as you can all imagine, it's a little bit, it seems on its surface, like a dramatically inert setup, because it's just this doll staked in the same place, coming online, like kind of coming awake. I really thought that he would be sort of like the mordant stand-up comedian, and actually he's quite earnest. You know, I was telling this to my best friend and she said, Karen, is that a realistic expectation for a man made of straw? You're mad that he's not carrying his comic weight? Like, and I was like, that's fair.
Join us next week for that conversation. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR network. Our editors and producers for this week's show are Haley Krausen and Lou Ann Stevens. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. This is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.